ॐ ज्ञानचमरन्दस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुर्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मायं ददाति स्वपदन्तिकम्. पञ्चकल्पातरूप्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभयेभ्य च पतितानां भावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानन्द श्रियाद्वैत गदाधर शिवासदे गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. So greetings from Vrindavan. As I mentioned before, I came a few days from Govardhan, and I didn't bring my books here, so I'm going to speak again a little bit extemporaneously. There's some insights that come from that. Really wonderful here. In the last few days, I went to two of the most beautiful places. I think the most beautiful places in Vrindavan. One is Gahavan. It's just so idyllic. It's a kund, a beautiful kund, dug deep between the beautiful mountains of Barsana with the fire. Gahavan, it's Radharani's garden, and they were the kirtan and japa retreat run by Bhurichan Prabhu and Satchinandana Swami was having their 12-hour kirtan. It was just idyllic. And then today they had their all-day japa, a 64-round japa day with their... They go to this place, Ter Kadamba, which in Vrindavan geography, it's halfway between... It's only about a half-hour walk between Jawa. Radharani's Radhika's home with her in-laws and Nandagram, where she came to cook for Krishna. And it's about halfway, and it's where Krishna would take the cows. And there's one Baba there, Rishikesh Baba, Ter Kadamba Baba. And, you know, bhakti makes things beautiful, so he's always thinking of ways to improve it. And there's two kuns, and it's just beautiful. So I went there just to chant in that atmosphere. And it's nice. One young man, Alex, came from America out of high school. He's been spending time. And he really liked the kirtan of this lady, Pasant Mataji, who runs the VIHG. So he came and told her how much he liked it. And then she was explaining some of her realizations of what happens at these japa and kirtan retreats. She said the best example is the poem of Rupa Goswami, where he said, you know, when you get spontaneous devotion, it's just like a young boy is attracted to a young girl. When the young boy comes into the proximity of the young girl, he doesn't have to do anything. The attraction is just there. It's manifest. So she explained that when you associate with the holy name, especially in that type of environment that helps you focus, then eventually that type of attraction manifests. And you can see it because these people weren't sadhakas necessarily that were there. In fact, probably very few were. So the daunting thought of just chanting all day, it could be terrifying. But, you know, it's amazing when you have 300 people chanting for hours, what it does to the environment and what that environment does to your consciousness, which is why it's so important to live in the association, but not just sharing pizza together or birthday party, but doing what devotees do, which is devote themselves to God, mostly through chanting and hearing. And it creates, the sound creates a powerful atmosphere that affects your consciousness. After all, the mind is made out of the same thing as wood, basically. It's the three modes of nature. It's just woven in a different way. But the mind and matter, and therefore they have a mutual influence upon each other. And one of the most prominent aspects of the environment is the object of sound. So when the sounds of the environment are so purified, spiritualized, it molds the mind in a devotional way. And I stayed and chanted there until 2, and then they took lunch, and then it was about, then it ended 5, so I left. I had to go back. It's mainly to give this class here. But I could see it creates you're within the holy name. When everyone's chanting the holy name, it's not that it's something outside of you, it's something you're within. And it's very, very sheltered. It's a shelter. One of my main meditations of chanting the holy name is shelter, like a child in the lap of his mother, that type of feeling. It's shelter. And shelter is Sharanagata. It means, and what is Sharanagata? What is shelter? It's where you're protected, where you're maintained. That's shelter. And surrender means to have faith that that shelter is Krishna, who manifests in his direction and instructions through the teachers, through his books, through our conscience, through destiny. And one who is surrendered to God, he has confidence in that under that direction, under that guidance, under that shelter, and surrendering to that, then I will be maintained. I am maintained. In the holy name of the Lord, which is the main instruction, and worshiping God, worshiping Krishna, taking shelter rather of my whims, but of truth, I am maintained. I am fully sheltered. I am protected. I have faith. And when you take shelter of the holy name, then that faith arises in the heart because you feel it. You feel something that's so important that it's life. And you actually have life, and you're convinced of it. So, I went to this retreat. Sublime. The weather here is top now. My God. End of November. Not cold at all. Just beautiful. Sun's out. So we went to that. And of course, my program in Vrindavan is I will now begin to I will begin to teach as I'm doing. This is one of my favorite activities, giving class among interested people. So, because there's some new people here, I'm speaking, and it'll be relevant to everyone the Lord travels to Vrindavan. Of course, this is the famous story where he traveled to Vrindavan. He has to go through the Jharkhand forest. And, you know, the introductory verse says, you know, the tigers and all the animals are dancing and chanting. So this sounds kind of, you know, mythological or fictitious. But if you know the yoga psychology and you know the Sankhya, the how the world is constructed, how it works, again, the same thing. The shape of the mind will powerfully affect the environment. And when the mind becomes free from desire, which is the root of ahimsa or nonviolence, because as soon as there's some desire, the tendency will be to envy, the tendency will be to desire, the tendency will be to exploit. When perfectly becomes detached, and therefore has no trace of exploitation within the consciousness, when one sees when one begins to think legitimately of others before oneself, and that's really spiritual consciousness. Material consciousness is if we check what our consciousness is, how much are we thinking of ourselves and just worried about the world not conforming to our desires? So when one has that type of mood, dira dira jana priyo priyakaro nirmatsaro pujito, when one has that type of non-envy and then that shape of the mind has such an influence on the consciousness of others that and there's a cosmic reciprocation by the arrangement of God, that someone in that kind of consciousness, that no one can be nonviolent in their presence. And therefore, it's not surprising that in each tradition there are saints, like Saint Francis and Sri Chaitanya, that their consciousness affects animals. See, consciousness is only delimited by the false ego. I explained this before many times. What the false ego does is delimit the consciousness to the particular body you have. A consciousness is not, when you're in an ant, it's the consciousness of the soul. So it can expand from an ant, and then you have an elephant. Now the consciousness is expanded over a greater territory. So it's false ego that delimits the consciousness, and when one is free from
false ego, his consciousness is not limited. It can even pervade the minds of others and read the minds of others and control the minds of others or serve the minds of others. Or so someone of purity without that false ego, their consciousness can act even powerful, the aggression, it can subdue the aggression of other animals and their enmity between one another. Anyway, his travels, he's going to go there, but before he begins his travel, he begs, because Chaitanya Charitamrita is a very interesting book, because it shows a real community. There's a crowd where there's many people, but each has their own self-interest, and there's a community where one has a mood of service to a body which is takes precedence over themselves, and they're comfortable in that. And that works when it's love. And there's surrender. So the Chaitanya Charitamrita is very, very interesting with the type of exchanges that go on. And you learn so much, so many things about human behavior, the type of actions and behaviors that will actually give you a fruit of auspiciousness. What to speak of changing your consciousness. So it's so interesting. Lord Chaitanya is about to go to Vrindavan, and he wants to go himself. He doesn't want to go with others. Why? Because he is the guru. And he doesn't want to enter Vrindavan with people trying to put him in the center. Because that's the last place you want to be in a spiritual place. The consciousness that I am the center. Because when you have the consciousness you're the center, then you miss the center. And the holy place, the center is God. So therefore you miss the whole place, purpose of going to a holy place. That's why it says in Nectar of Devotion that one should not ride. One should not ride to the temple in a palanquin. It's the same thing. You're entering into a holy place where there is a center. You don't want to come in the consciousness that you are the center. I know when we used to have functions at Krishna Balaram Mandir, I remember I once sent a bus. I used to have a bus in Vrindavan. And I sent the bus to pick up Narayan Maharaj and, 20 of his brahmacharis to come to this function. So I noticed they parked the bus down the street, not in front of the temple, and they got off because they wanted to honor that. So the bus is like a big palanquin. You don't want to come into Vrindavan or into the temple with any accoutrements of power, anything that will push one to the center, because you'll miss the whole point of a holy place. The whole point of a holy place is that there is a center, and you love the center. When you love the center, you don't want to be in the center. So naturally, Lord Chaitanya doesn't want to go as a big guru. He doesn't want to go to Vrindavan with his entourage. It's very natural. In fact, when we were taking prasadam out in Ter Kadamba, Ori Jahan invited me and Giriraj Swami, same prasadam everybody else ate, but we sat in a separate place, beautiful, idyllic place. And they're offering Borjan's table, a little sit-up table. Eventually, we accepted them. Borjan just wanted a table because he felt not here. I don't want distinction here. Why? Because when you're experiencing bhakti, when you're experiencing the holy name, you're experiencing love. And you so don't want to cover that consciousness by thinking that you're in the center. By moving yourself out of the position of ashraya, subject of love. Because after all, it's your consciousness. It's not a physical position that allows love to flow in the heart. It's a consciousness. And the consciousness is I adore something. I worship something. I respect something that's in the center. So it's so interesting that Lord Chaitanya wouldn't go. Anyway, that was kind of an interesting story. And I think I'm going to repeat. It's one of those days again. I get up real early. This morning I got up at 12:30. So right now it's about 8 o'clock here. But I wanted to explain something else, and I hope I'm lucid enough to do it. Just one second. I'll be right back. Give me 1 minute, please. I wanted to explain something else, as I'm not giving a formal class today. A little bit about Guru Tattva. I spoke on Wednesday, but I think most of the people here are not on Wednesday, and the people who are on Wednesday would like to hear it again. But just one more minute, 1 second, 1 second. It happens rarely, but I initiated one young lady, Hillary, who produced the film The Women of Bhakti and also did that promo for my Bhakti Immersion retreat. So it was a nice discussion on Guru Tattva, and I thought it's worth doing. Explain here. And the basis, basically, I started off the lecture by explaining, because her parents had come from New Zealand, her sister had come from Scotland, her cousins had come from, so many people that weren't devotees. So I wanted to explain Guru Tattva in a way that's relevant to them. And she was getting married the next day. Her husband was getting initiated by Satchinandana Swami. They wanted to do this before the marriage. So the parents had come for a wedding, and now they were also getting an initiation ceremony. So the father, he he came to see me the day before, and when he came to see me, he said, I don't know much about initiation. So I'm looking forward to initiation and wedding. I don't know much about the initiation. But he said, I certainly know about marriage because he has three kids. So I explained that to people. That's how I began my lecture. And I said, the way I want to explain what is initiation is by explaining my relationship with Hillary in that regard. And I explained how every day in Vrindavan at 4 o'clock, I go outside of my room and I teach some shastra. And I have this policy of never advertising it because I like to speak to people who are very interested. And when you don't advertise it, it kind of goes around by word of mouth. And there's no promotion to it. So I sometimes get up to 20, 25 people. But the level of interest. So somehow or other, she had found out about it. She came to my class. And, you know, somehow I really spoke to her I spoke to her, and the class spoke to her. Not that I spoke to her, but it spoke to her. It said something that inspired her in devotion. And in a way, she really hadn't experienced before. Ramanda Brahmate Konya Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. What is the Bhakti Lata Beach? It's the conviction that serving God is the most sublime thing. I remember getting the Bhakti Lata Beach, getting that experience, getting that conviction. And that experience doesn't come fully if there are misunderstandings and doubts. So generally, the way the faith really comes is that somehow or other, Krishna makes an arrangement that someone speaks to us in a way that gives us faith, gives us a type of faith perhaps in the reasonability of the message, enough of a understanding, enough of a conception of reasonability that we open our hearts to the experience. And that's the real faith. That's the real... You can't have bhakti without spiritual knowledge. Because if you have a wrong conception of reality, you can't love reality. If you think that we are God, or God is matter, or we are the bodies, we the enjoyers or the controllers. If you have those wrong conceptions, you think God is matter, then how can you love God? If you think that we are God, then that's not love. Love comes from another. So it's a preliminary understanding of knowledge, the right conception, to open us up to the practices open it up to the practice and experience of devotion. But anyway, somehow my class spoke to Hillary. And I explained that, therefore, the first thing that a guru is a teacher. And that's exactly what a teacher is. A teacher is one who speaks to us. And how does a good teacher speak to us? They know our frame of reference. They know our language. They know our mode of understanding. And therefore, a particular truth can be communicated to us in a way that we can assimilate it, in a way that we can expand our understanding. So what I was explaining is that Krishna is actually Guru. And he chooses to speak to us through certain people who can present the message according to our understanding. So I presented the first thing as teacher as a very personal and individual thing. I described it's almost like the lens by which we can see things properly. And I describe, therefore, different people require different gurus. The guru is one, but the lens in which that knowledge and understanding is transmitted varies. I said just as much as a person with defective vision needs a particular prescription to see properly. So in that sense, the guru is the prescription through which God can speak to us in a way that the truth of God becomes clear despite the defects of our vision. In other words, we can't see properly because our eyes are defective. So for something to be seen by us, there must be a corrective lens between ourselves, between that object and our eyes. And therefore, God has a different form of mercy for each individual. I said that in the purport. And part of that mercy is the teachers who speak to us, who have a lens to our eyes that enable us to see truth. So that was the first principle. And the second principle I mentioned in terms of my relationship with Hillary, now Ladini Radha Devi Dasi, I explained that she started to see one young man who had grown up in the Krishna consciousness movement and who had been trained in Krishna consciousness through the authority of Prabhupada. Okay, I'm back, Venugoswami. So, you know, I explained that although she went to Bhaktivedanta College and heard about Prabhupada, and even though I spoke to her extensively about Prabhupada, somehow being in this relationship, this intimate relationship, where her partner had been very, very fixed on the lens of Prabhupada and the importance of that lens, that a very, very substantial part of her understanding of the Guru Parampara was enhanced. But it also created a problem, because Prabhupada has such authority, and his life is such an example of devotion, that the doubt naturally arose, will having another teacher in Guru Parampara between me and Prabhupada obscure that relationship? And they were struggling with that doubt, and I spoke to them extensively about it. But still, it was really a hard thing for them. And they weren't Ritviks, but they were struggling to understand that. And a very, very wonderful thing happened at Srila Prabhupada's Disappearance Festival. It's very, very unique, because it's not like there's so many speakers that everybody has a few minutes. People are allowed to speak to their heart's content, and everyone is reasonable about that. But people speak 10, 15, 20 minutes, a half hour. And what happens is people tend not just to share stories, which are delightful, but they share their realizations. And even I was astounded sitting there, especially listening to the first lecture by Jayadvaita Maharaj, and then Bhavanath Swami, Dear Krishna Maharaj, Sachinandana Swami, Keshav Bharti Maharaj, Puri Jambabu, myself, Ashish Prabhu. And the lectures were just wonderful. Wonderful realizations about Srila Prabhupada and his legacy. So Hillary and Kuva at the time, they had listened to that, and afterwards they came to my room practically crying, very shaken up. But they wanted to surrender. They wanted to surrender fully now. They feel like they were young, but they're saying, we're wasting my lives. We really want to sacrifice and give ourselves to Prabhupada through his parampara. And the understanding they had is that through those who knew Prabhupada and were sincere, dedicated servants of Prabhupada, not just a class system, that I'm a Prabhupada disciple, but people actually dedicated their lives, that they had an experience of Prabhupada that was more real or deep than they ever had before. And they understood this principle that indirect means direct. And I described, we are not direct in our perception, because we're seeing through a particular shape of the mind. So we're seeing through, the analogy of someone wearing glasses is perfect. What do glasses do? A person cannot perceive things properly because his eyes are nearsighted or his lens of his eye is distorted. So what the corrective lens does is not obscure the object, but reveal the object. And that's the mystery of group parampara. The teacher doesn't obscure the parampara. He reveals the parampara. So, and then the last realization I explained in terms of the guru-disciple relationship and my relationship with Adini Radha was that the day after that we decided she would be initiated, and then I was walking back from the ISKCON Bhaktivedanta Ashram to my place, and it was Purnima, so the Prakram Marg was just like a quarter of a million people going around that hill during the 24 hours. And just, you know, throngs, an ocean, a river of people. And then I saw she was running across the street today, Maharaj, Maharaj. I said, oh, what's going on? She said, well, Puva. This is, as he's known before the initiation, was doing some to prepare for the wedding in the ashram, some help he needed. I was waiting in the car. I said, okay, we can talk. So she explained something, and it was very, very interesting. And I was explaining how I thought it was a good realization. She became excited to become initiated. And then in the evening, she felt she was going to die. And I said, what was that feeling that she was going to die? And what it means is, what it means is that, you know, the initiation is pancha samskara. So what's the first samskara of initiation? It's tapa. And tapa means regret. And what's the regret? The regret is, for my life, living selfishly as the center, rather than selflessly as the servant of the center. So initiation means that regret, and it means that transformation from being the center to serving the center. But then something's dying, and what's dying? What's dying is the false ego. The consent of life by which we have lived our life. The concept of life that I am the center and things are objects for me. So initiation means real initiation. And I explained the initiation we give is the chance to really attain that. It's the beginning of attaining that. But it's frightening. And I explain when I chant japa and I bring the image of Prabhupada, sometimes I become frightened. Because I know he lived as a servant of the center with full faith in the sublimity of that. And I know how much he demands that type of surrender from me as his disciple. So, I quoted Prabhupada's godbrother, Bhakti Rakshaka Sridhar Maharaj. I know where he got this, maybe some philosopher. Yet to die to live. And what dies? It's the false ego, the false conception of the self. And the commitment to give that up. And I explained, just like I read in one book, the analogy of initiation to, and the commitment of that to someone getting married. A young girl is in her father's home. She's the daughter of her father. And then when she makes that commitment, she becomes the wife of her husband. And that concept of the daughter of her father no longer becomes her main identity. So it may be frightening for a young girl. That's why when the marriage is there, they send over the bridesmaids. So initiation means change in conception, a commitment from the concept that I am the center to the concept I am the servant of the center. We really want to be a servant of God? I think Prabhupada's godbrother, and he's a wonderful philosopher, also quoted that, you know, what the spiritual world means, it's the land of gurus. Everyone is to be served. And when our objective is so much to position ourselves in the center, that type of commitment can be frightening. If you are sincere, and then I finished up my lecture by explaining that the main way in which we get rid of the false ego, I am the center, and to develop the real ego, I am the servant of the center, is to develop an attraction for the center. And the best way that one develops an attraction to the center is associating with the center, who manifests in the holy name. And by associating with the holy name, the Shakti of the holy name instills love within your heart. And when you have love, you want the object of your love in the center. You never want to be in the center. You're happy to serve. And what a shift in consciousness that is, and what a commitment that is. So, and so what is the process? Tarambhaje, Sarvashreshne, Namasankirtan, Aparade Poya, Paya Premadat. There are 9 processes of devotional service, but of all, chanting the holy name is best. And it's done without offense. One attains love of God. You develop attraction, love, service. And you regret the life of selfishness. Okay, I'll end here. Anybody like to ask any questions? Oh, wait. Wrong mode is on. Excuse me.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Someone like to ask a question?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Gail.
Hey, Gail, hi, Krishna.
What, Maharaj? Ooh, I don't know where all that noise is coming from.
No, wait, I got to get a different mode here. 1 second. Yeah. Hello? Did I mess it up? Star 6, unmute yourself. 1 second.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Ooh. Uh-oh.
Hey, Gail.
Hare Krishna?
Yeah.
You can hear me?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Danielle, you have a question?
Yeah, there's so many things, but there's so much noise.
Okay, I'm gonna do something else. Okay, yeah. Hi, Val.
We hear you, Maharaj.
Hi, Krishna Maharaj.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you okay? Oh, anyway, I was trying to say so many things I want to say. There's, for one thing, it was such a rich, full, and exciting class today. My God! And then you ended it with such a bang, you know, with you know how to go from you know having developing that service attitude to you know.
Wow!
That,
thank you.
Yeah, that it was amazing.
Yeah.
But for one thing, another thing is, you know, it was such exciting news about Hladini Radha, you know, so many congratulations to her. I'm so happy that you shared your lecture with us, you know. I wanted to ask actually, when you were discussing the effect of a person who is ahimsa, you know, nonviolent in his consciousness, and how he can affect, you know, others. You were explaining that, you know, the conditioned soul is delimited by his body, you know? And once you become, I guess, more self-realized, once you realize that you're the soul, not the body, then your consciousness expands, and all the boundaries of your consciousness are removed, you know? And so I'm trying to reconcile that with the fact that the consciousness, or that the jiva is infinitesimal, you know, it's limited, whereas the consciousness of God is unlimited, you know. So, I feel the fact that we are infinitesimal.
I have to look at this in the Yoga Sutras, but at least we know that it becomes limited to an ant and it expands to an elephant, right? So let's put it this way: it's an ant of consciousness. To what degree it expands, I'm not sure.
Okay. Okay. So anyway, thank you again for such a really, really fulfilling class. Oh, when you were discussing the shelter.
This was a class where go ahead, what were you saying?
Yeah, I was just saying another part of it that I really appreciated so much was your explaining of, you know, the relationship between us and Krishna, that of shelter, you know, where, you know, like in a child in the parent's lap, you know. I mean, I first heard that analogy with Mother Savitri, and it was nice to hear you, you know, reiterate that same concept. You know, it was really heartwarming.
Thank you, Jill.
Yeah.
Yeah, really amazing that I was sleeping also.
Yeah, that's why, Maharaj. You know by now that's why.
Okay. Okay, anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances.
Hi, Bo, Nanda Dula, Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, it was a wonderful class. You know, can I ask you now one question?
No more questions. I'm too tired.
Okay.
I'll just have
thank
to say
you,
goodbye
Maharaj.
To people.
It's
so late at night, I guess. Okay, but thank you. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, people are respecting that I'm so tired. Okay, a bunch of help with the visa. Because I'm the baby, so I'm 14 of poverty.